It's summer 1923, and Forrest Mars is lying on the floor, staring at the ceiling of a Chicago jail cell. The cops arrested the 19-year-old cigarette salesman last night. His crime? Plastering posters for Camel cigarettes on every downtown wall and street sign he could find, without permission. He sits up when he hears footsteps approaching. A guard pulls out a set of keys and pushes open the door of his cell.
Your dad posted bail for you, kid. Get up and get out.
Forrest spots his father the moment he leaves the cell. He hasn't seen his father in years, but the resemblance is uncanny. They're both stocky guys with prominent Roman noses, thin lips, and dark, piercing eyes.
Hello, son. Want something to eat?
They head for a nearby diner and sit in awkward silence. Forrest stares at his father warily while sucking chocolate malt through a straw. Forrest's mom divorced Frank when he was six, but he's heard plenty about his dad, like how he's a good-for-nothing failure who abandoned his family, and how he roams from city to city leaving unpaid debts and bankrupt candy companies behind him. Unsure how to break the ice, Frank starts talking about his latest venture.
I've got a business in Minneapolis, St. Paul now. It's called Morrow Bar. Sells candy around the Twin Cities. And yeah, it's doing pretty good, too. The buttercreams are popular. Got a big house now, too. You know, you should come visit. Meet your half-sister, Patricia.
Forrest is surprised and intrigued. You see, Forrest reckons he's a born businessman. He's got nothing but ego to base that on. But that doesn't stop him from offering his dad some advice.
You should think bigger. You should make a candy bar that can be sold everywhere, just like Camel cigarettes.
All right, son. What do you suggest I make?
Forrest's not sure. He hasn't thought that far ahead. He stares into his malt.
Why don't you turn this chocolate malt into a candy bar?
Frank leans back in his seat.
Interesting. You know, son, that might just work.
Frank runs with Forrest's idea. Once home, he makes a chocolate malt-flavored bar of nougat, spreads a thin layer of caramel on top, and then coats it in a creamy milk chocolate. He names this milkshake-flavored candy bar Milky Way. And with their new creation, Frank and Forrest are charting a course that'll take them right to the top of the candy business. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. On the last episode, Milton Hershey introduced milk chocolate to America, built the town of Hershey, and donated his riches to a school for orphans. But now, it's the 1920s, and a new candy empire is about to reach for the stars. This is Episode 2, Blast Off. It's 1928, and Frank Mars is at the headquarters of America's top chocolate maker, Hershey. He's come to Pennsylvania to make a deal his company's future depends on. Frank's been doing well since creating Milky Way. Sales are growing, and he's changed the company name from Marobar to Mars. But now this 40-something candy man's betting the house on Milky Way. He's spending $500,000 building an ultra-modern factory in Chicago. He hopes the investment will send Milky Way sales sky high. But for the plan to work, he needs help from Hershey's general manager, William Murray. Murray's a tall, broad-shouldered executive with snow-white hair, and he's the business brawn to Milton Hershey's business brain. While Hershey delivers the vision, Murray manages the day-to-day operations that turn ideas into profit. Murray welcomes Frank with a hearty slap on the back before sitting down behind his huge desk.
So, Mr. Mars, how can I be of service?
Frank tells Murray about his new plant.
My new factory will increase production 5, maybe 6-fold. And that means I need chocolate, and plenty of it.
Murray grins. Hershey already sells chocolate coating to confectioners who lack the know-how or money to do it themselves. Hershey only regards companies that make solid chocolate bars as rivals. Everyone else is a potential customer.
Okay, what quantities do you have in mind?
Millions of pounds a month.
Murray almost falls off his chair. It's enough to double the size of Hershey's chocolate supply business. But Frank's not finished.
But I need the chocolate on credit. All my money's tied up in building the new plant.
Murray's face falls. Frank's gone bust so many times, every supplier in the business demands he pay cash up front.
Huh. What is it you're making again?
Frank opens his briefcase and hands Murray a Milky Way. Murray pulls back the beige paper wrapper and takes a bite. The sweet hit of fluffy nougat, sticky caramel, and milk chocolate explodes on his tongue.
Wow, that's a fine candy bar, Mr. Mars. And I reckon it will sell. Yeah, you've got your credit.
The two smile and shake hands. They're both looking forward to a long and profitable alliance. It's 1929, and in the Chicago suburb of Oak Park, the new Mars factory is up and running. From the outside, this Spanish colonial building with its stained glass windows and manicured lawn looks like a country club, but inside, it's state-of-the-art industry. The interior is light, airy, and temperature-controlled. The production lines are equipped with the latest technology that smothers nougat and chocolate, and automated machines that can wrap more than 2,000 Milky Ways an hour. And, thanks to Frank's obsession with cleanliness, the place is spotless. Every surface shines. But there's one feature the factory workers could do without. Frank's son, Forrest Mars. Officially, Forrest's job is to buy eggs, sugar, and other supplies, but he swaggers about as if Mars is his company. Today, he's prowling around the caramel machines. As bars of nougat on their way to becoming Milky Ways rattle past, he scans the conveyor belt like a hawk, searching for the slightest imperfection. Suddenly, he snatches a misshapen bar from the belt and flings it at the worker charged with catching defects. The sticky bar of nougat splats against the back of the worker's head.
What the?
The worker turns to see Forrest marching towards him, face red, eyes narrowed.
You imbecile! You're supposed to spot mistakes, not be the mistake. I should fire you.
Shortly after, Frank summons his son to his office.
Forrest, I need you to control your temper. You see a problem, tell me. I'll handle it. You stick with what I hired you to do.
Forrest responds by changing the subject.
You know, I've been thinking.
We need to get into Canada before the British companies like Cadbury and Roundtree get embedded there.
That's not the topic, but listen, I've only just built this plant, okay? Canada can wait.
No, you need to keep pushing, keep building. That's how you win.
Frank sighs. His son's attitude grates on him. But what can he do? He can't fire him. He already feels guilty enough about abandoning Forrest as a kid. But while Mars is using its new plant to join the majors, Milton Hershey's thinking even bigger. It's a hot summer night in 1929, and the 71-year-old chocolate magnate is sitting on the porch of his hilltop mansion in Hershey, Pennsylvania. With him is Wall Street banker Stanley Russell, nursing a scotch and soda. As the pair stares at the stars, Russell gets to business. He wants Hershey to join what he believes will be the greatest achievement of his career, a mega merger of Hershey, Kraft, Heinz, and Colgate-Palmolive.
Mr. Hershey, the Hershey Chocolate Company would be the very heart of the conglomerate I want to create. And with your support, I believe the other companies will sign up.
Hershey sips his drink. He's been weighing Russell's proposal for months. It'll cost his chocolate empire its independence, but the rewards could be huge. Hershey will become the basis of one of America's biggest companies. He also believes the money he's given his school for orphans will be safer in a business that makes more than just chocolate.
Okay, Mr. Russell, I'm game. What's next?
Russell smiles. Him and his bank are going to make tens of millions from this deal.
Well, sir, I pay you for a 6-month option to execute the deal. That should give me time to get the other companies on board.
In the months that follow, Russell races to sign up companies to join the conglomerate. But just weeks away from sealing the deal, disaster strikes. On October 24th, 1929, the stock market crashes. The economy goes into meltdown. Banks start going bust. Thousands of companies go under. Millions find themselves out of work. And Russell's bid to absorb Hershey into a multi-million dollar conglomerate is toast. But Hershey isn't bothered. He's more worried about what the Great Depression will do to his chocolate town. As the economic fallout worsens, he decides he has to do something to defend it. He bars the company from laying off workers, cutting wages, or curtailing production. To stoke the economy of the town of Hershey, he orders a massive construction program to build a sports arena, a luxury hotel, and a state-of-the-art office block. Even as his company's revenues plunge, the chocolate tycoon holds the line, shielding his town from the worst ravages of the Great Depression. But Milton Hershey's not alone in weathering the economic storm. Frank Mars is also bucking the trend. Frank's discovering that Milky Way is a depression-proof product. Its chunky size makes people think each 5-cent bar is better value than a thin bar of chocolate, even though it's mainly cheap nougat. Frank's company, Mars, is also scoring big with two new products. In 1930, Frank creates a nougat bar topped with caramel and peanuts. He calls it Snickers, after one of his horses. And when he starts coating it with chocolate in 1932, sales skyrocket. That same year, he launches Three Musketeers, and after some tinkering, turns it into a caramel-free version of the Milky Way. The resilient sales, new products, and plenty of advertising turns Mars into America's number two candy bar maker after Hershey. Not that Hershey feels threatened. After all, Mars is a valued customer. It buys all of its candy bars' chocolate coating from Hershey. Mars's success is Hershey's success, too. And with the big bucks rolling in, Frank gets to splash his cash on horses, ranches, airplanes, and luxury cars. It'd all be great if it wasn't for one persistent problem. His 28-year-old son, Forrest. It's fall 1932,
and Forrest's just barged into his father's office in Chicago. He doesn't ask if it's a good time. He just sits down and makes a demand.
I want a third of the company.
Sorry?
I want a third of the business. I deserve it, given all I've done here.
Frank snaps. He's put up with Forrest's arrogance and outbursts for long enough.
That's not happening. In fact, this company isn't big enough for both of us. Hell, I'm not even sure this country is big enough. I want you gone.
Forrest feels rage boiling up within him. The way he sees it, his dad is casting him aside yet again.
Fine. You can take your damn company and stick it up your ass.
Frank ignores the insult.
Forrest, here's my offer. I'll give you $50,000 and the rights to Mars products in Europe, all right? Go there, start your business, stay out of my way. Deal?
Deal.
It's a week later, and Forrest Mars stands on the deck of a steamer heading to Europe. As the Statue of Liberty disappears over the horizon, he starts thinking about his new business, about how he's going to build an empire that dwarfs Mars, and how, once he's done it, he's going to come back and rub it in everyone's face.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
It's a clear spring day in 1933, and the morning shift is underway at Nestle's chocolate works in Vevey, Switzerland. And that means the plant supervisor can get on with today's big task, hiring new workers. He's gazing out his office window at the snow-capped mountains lining Lake Geneva when the next candidate enters. The supervisor turns to see a young, stocky guy with prematurely receding hair.
Bonjour, comment vous appelez-vous?
The candidate looks confused.
Je m'appelle Forrest Mars?
The supervisor raises an eyebrow.
You're English?
American. Uh-huh. Why are you in Switzerland? Why do you want to work here?
Forrest's already got his story ready.
I want to live in the Alps, and I thought working in a chocolate factory would be fun.
Have you worked in a chocolate factory before?
No, but I learned fast. I'm off the floors if I must.
Forrest gets the job. He spends the next few weeks learning everything he can about Nestle's operations and how it makes milk chocolate. Then, after gleaning all the insights he can, He quits. He's going to start his own candy empire in Britain. It's August 1933, and in a one-room factory in the industrial town of Slough, just west of London, Forrest is preparing for war. Compared to Britain's chocolate kings Cadbury and Roundtree, Forrest's venture is puny. It's called Food Manufacturers. It's got just 4 employees, and it depends on Cadbury for its chocolate. But Forrest's convinced his new candy bar will prove a winner. He calls it the Mars Bar, and it's a slightly sweeter version of his dad's Milky Way. Forrest pushes the Mars Bar hard from the moment it goes into production. He runs eye-catching newspaper ads, badgers stores until they stock his candy bars, and ensures that stores never run out of them. The relentless sales and marketing push pays off fast. Food Manufacturers sells 2 million Mars bars in its first year. Soon after, Forrest launches his own version of Milky Way, and just like his dad's Three Musketeers bar, it's chocolate-flavored nougat wrapped in milk chocolate. As his business grows, Forrest forges a unique management style, one that's far removed from the cozy paternalism of Hershey. He stamps out traditional hierarchies by giving all workers the title of associates. He encourages transparency with open-plan offices. To motivate his associates, he pays them 3 times the going rate. He also creates a generous and transparent bonus scheme that ensures workers know exactly what their team must do to land a sweet end-of-year lump sum. To encourage long-term thinking, he sets targets for the return on total assets. That means managers can't just look at revenues. They have to factor in how well they're deploying the company's resources. The target encourages managers to maximize efficiency rather than chase short-term profits. And to ensure they follow his commandments to the letter, Forrest uses his volcanic temper to keep his people on edge, especially when it comes to what he sees as the bedrock of good business: product quality. It's 1935, and Forrest Mars is on the warpath in the Slough offices of Food Manufacturers. He's just spotted a poorly wrapped Mars bar in a local candy store.
Bring the latest boxes of Mars bars to the meeting room. Now!
As managers carry the cardboard boxes into the glass-walled room, the rest of the office watch nervously from their desks. Forrest rips open one of the boxes and starts rummaging through it. Suddenly, he stops and slowly raises a Mars bar into the air. The wrapper is slightly misaligned. The managers gulp.
This is unacceptable!
Without warning, Forrest hurls the defective bar across the room. It whizzes past one of the manager's heads and thumps into the glass wall. The associates outside the room jump in their seats. Forrest dives back into the box. He pulls out more incorrectly wrapped Mars bars and hurls them at the room. Managers duck and dive to avoid the chocolate-coated missiles. Finally, Forrest tips the entire contents of the box right there onto the floor.
This shipment is ruined. Destroy the lot. And if it happens again, you're all fired.
After the outburst, the managers return to work determined to make things right. They've gotten used to Forrest's explosive temper, and they're also on board with his perfectionist demands, not least because it's a winning formula. 2 years ago, Food Manufacturers didn't exist. Now, it's Britain's 3rd biggest candy bar maker. And as Food Manufacturers thrives, they do too, thanks to Forrest's generous bonuses. The UK's number 2, Roundtree, responds to the threat by launching a spate of new and novel products. In 1935, it scores big with Kit Kat, 4 wafer fingers covered in milk chocolate. 2 years later, it comes up with Smarties, a cardboard tube filled with small chocolate discs in colorful sugar shells. Smarties is another hit, and it solves one of the biggest problems in the chocolate business: the summer drop-off. With air-conditioned stores still rare, sales of chocolate plunge during the summer heat as candy bars melt on the shelves. But with their crispy candy shells, Smarties can withstand the soaring temperatures. And that convinces Roundtree that Smarties could be the candy that finally helps it break into the U.S. But before the company can bring Smarties to America, a shadow falls over Europe. Nazi Germany invades Poland, plunging Europe into war and forcing Roundtree to put its U.S. plans on ice. The war also changes Forrest's strategy. After reading that the British government is about to impose extra taxes on foreign residents, he decides to head home. But he's not returning empty-handed. He's coming back with a big idea. He's going to make his own version of Smarties and use them to conquer the American chocolate business. On the next episode, Forrest Mars lays a trap, war breaks out in the Mars boardroom, and opportunity knocks for Hershey. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Emily Frost edited this story. Our editor and producer is Jenny Lauer Beckman. Sound designed by Kyle Randall for Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.